Hello there. Welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim, your host. And as usual, I'm here with Andy Steiger and Chris Battle.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, good morning to you.
Yeah, the routine has begun. It is it is the podcast morning. So
it may be evening for you, but we're glad you're with us.
As before we get started, just a quick announcement, a reminder for you all. For those of you who are interested, we're hosting the Thinking Series training seminar. And again, this is not a place where we teach you the contents of the Thinking Series, but how to run the Thinking Series. So we'll be talking about, you know, what are some good practices, things that we've learned over the years as we hosted the Thinking Series.
And we're bringing in some pros as well, people who've been using the Thinking Series in a church, in coffee shops,
right?
And letting them speak to what's worked and what hasn't. Mm-hmm. In fact, we're partnering with Missions Fest.
Yep.
They approached us on this and said, hey, let's train up churches on how to use this resource.
Yeah, and that's exactly where it's going to happen, actually. We're going to be doing this at the office of Missions Fest Vancouver, which is in Burnaby, close to Coquitlam, on Caribou Road there. So the ticket is $15. You can still sign up for it. If you want to get the whole resource, if you want to get the ticket and the Thinking Series material, then it's $45. So it's a pretty good deal. So if you're free this Saturday morning, it's going to happen from 9 to noon. So make sure you come and check us out and see how you can use this tool to evangelize and train the next generation of leaders. So with that, there's been a lot of this gender-neutral bathroom stuff in the news.
Bit of a firestorm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. My Facebook feed has been full of them. Mm-hmm.
And what's striking these days, though, is that we're seeing corporate America take on these issues. So these companies like PayPal and
pretty unprecedented.
Yeah.
Companies that you wouldn't even think of as well. Like, I mean, even TV shows like The Walking Dead.
Right.
In Georgia. There was a couple others.
Marvel and Disney have threatened that they would pull out of Georgia because of their religious freedom bill, which, as I understand it, which allows clerics to refuse to perform same-sex weddings if it goes against their religious beliefs. So they companies like Disney and Marvel and AMC, who produce the Walking Dead series, a very, very popular TV show. In fact, I understand it's the most popular TV show out there right now. And you understand that the whole thing is set in Georgia, mm-hmm. and they're threatening that they're going to pull out. They're going to find some other places to shoot the TV series or make movies and things like that.
I've always found that bizarre because as someone who obviously is pro-marriage, I find it weird that someone would want to get married by someone who didn't want to do it. Like, you know, I'm going to force you to marry me against your wishes, but do it joyfully.
Yeah.
Right? Like that to me is bizarre. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't want someone who didn't want to do it to be doing the ceremony.
Well, I think what they see it as is discriminatory.
Right.
Well, yeah, I get the discriminatory part, but just as the person who's on the receiving end of it, why not go to, there'd be plenty of people that would do it, enjoy doing it.
Is it just me, or does there seem like there's irony here that both are fighting for religious freedom here, you know?
In religious freedom, LGBT community as well?
Well, I guess that's the irony, though, to me, is Which one is really about, you know, your freedom? One is to force anyone to marry you, and the other one is to be able to hold to your religious, you know, convictions.
Yeah. One is sort of, you know, keeping to yourself, right? Like religious freedom side of things is we want to be able to just kind of keep to ourselves, whereas the other side seems to be like you have to be able to do this,
and this has been the cry from the very beginning, hasn't it? It's more than just being allowed to be homosexual. It's more than just being allowed to get married. It's about acceptance from day one.
Yeah,
and in fact, I think this is one of the reasons why they keep trying to equate this with racism, with slavery,
mm-hmm. It's the new civil rights movement now, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
Because it's about...
And do you guys think that that's a fair assessment?
No, not at all. To me, race is something I've written about this before, but race is something that you're endowed with at birth, and there is no person alive would ever say that race is something that could somehow be confused or you're trans race. I know that we've had experiences with, I can't remember the woman's name.
The lady, white, but she's
black on the
identified
inside.
Identified as black.
Exactly. Like that. But everybody understood that she needed help, right? Like that was an issue. I didn't hear any or read anybody that was like, yeah, no, that's, solidarity with her, right? She got on each side, mm-hmm. didn't agree with it. But as far as homosexuality, like even if we want to go to the science itself, like more and more studies are coming out that no, it's not a matter of mere genetics. It may play a role in it, but it's not determined, right? When we think of even just things like alcoholism and the studies we've done with that, there's genes like the ADH1 gene that impacts a person's susceptibility to alcoholism, but it doesn't determine that person's alcoholism. And there's no gene there, or I can't name a gene, but people have said that there's a higher propensity towards homosexuality, but nothing that determines it mm-hmm. necessarily.
And this coming from you is interesting to me because you've been in like active addiction for 16 years, doing alcohol and drugs and things like that. And you probably often felt like you were determined to do this because you couldn't break out of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Often I would sit there and go, well, this is my lot in life, right? Yeah.
But you're saying that even if you have some genetic predisposition, you are not therefore determined by it.
No.
Right. Just as I think I've mentioned this too on the podcast.
Such as
before,
with Chris, that Chris was able to break from that. He's not determined by that.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Just as I am predisposed to alcoholism, we have some history in my family, but I'm not determined by that, or I would be an alcoholic right now, which I am not.
Have you guys read the story? Have you read Rosario Butterfield?
Rosario Butterfield. I know that name.
She was a lesbian was a, professor.
Right. Radical lesbian,
feminist and stuff. And she ended up becoming...
What was the book that she wrote?
The Confessions of an Unlikely Convert or something like that. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And now she's become a Christian since, hasn't she?
And married a pastor.
Wow, that's a
God's got a great sense of humor.
But what I'm curious about is this. Just recently, I saw an article about a biological male who chose for himself to be a woman, who later chose himself to be a dragon. Have you seen that? He actually started.
Sorry, man. I'm trying to keep a straight face. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm dead serious.
The look on your face as he said dragon too. Yeah. That made it for him.
No, seriously. Like he started like doing body modification, so he would split his tongue.
I have seen this guy
put like studs under his eyebrows. Disturbing. Yeah, and he cut off his ears. He redid his nose so it would look more like a dragon's nose, that sort of a thing.
What does a dragon's nose even look like, though?
I don't know. But, he is, going full out, and he is doing this tattoo on all over his body to have these scales, right? Like dragon scale kind of thing.
Hmm.
And he is...
So does that mean he's a dragon?
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm wondering, right? Because when we see that, even the most kind of, I guess... Most gay people that I know, which are few, they would look at that and go, "Oh, that's bizarre. That the guy is out of his mind." In fact, when this article came out a while ago about this lady in the UK who really felt like she was a cat, right? Like she's hissing at dogs and things like that. It's funny. I shared that on my Facebook, and a friend of mine commented on it, saying, "Oh, she's crazy." And I'm thinking to myself, because he's very much an LGBT, pro-LGBT kind of a guy, a good friend of mine from high school. And I was thinking to myself, okay, why is it that when she does that, when she chooses for herself to be a cat, that is crazy. So chooses for herself to be something she's not, that's crazy. And yet when, say, a man chooses for himself to be a woman, something that he is biologically not, why is that acceptable? What's the difference, I guess, is just what I'm curious. Where's the line, and why that line? It just seems arbitrary to me. I don't know. Maybe somebody can explain it to me.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, because it seems really interesting to me, because there's presuppositions here, right? And people, I think, even if they're far away from faith and they have a physicalist or naturalist understanding of the world, and they want to be like Peter Singer and say that we're akin to animals, people have a fundamental presupposition that humanity is different than an animal. First of all, I think, right? Like they say they intuitively know that we're special, mm-hmm. and that we play by different rules. So for a person to be a cat, that's crazy. But for a person to change their gender, well, that's okay. Like that's in bounds, right? Because it's more of it's a personal choice, and it's a human to human transition rather than human to another species.
I guess I'm just thinking, even if that's the case, you can look at it from the biological standpoint. You are claiming to be something that you're biologically not.
Oh, totally. It's irrational.
So in that sense, I think those two are, they seem to me to be the same kind of a thing.
Because they are.
But I guess, I don't know. Like I guess, just like you said, a lot of people on the pro-LGBT side would say, well, this is human to human thing. This is different than going from human to animal or human to a mythical creature, I guess that.
Well, yeah, here's the problem as I see it. If you want to identify as a cat or as a gender that you are biologically not, you know, nobody's you know trying to stop you. The problem is acceptance again. Mm-hmm. Is we live in a secular culture that is saying no, but you need to accept this. Mm-hmm. That this is normal and this is good, which is one of those things where I would just love to know. So even on a secular worldview, please explain to me how this is normal and good. And really this is, you know, I don't know. I can't even remember where we started, how we jumped into this, but have we brought up Bruce Springsteen yet?
No, not yet.
We're going to get
Oh, yeah, that's right. So we did talk about how people were boycotting different states. Well, just recently... You got like Bruce Springsteen and others that are saying
Bryan Adams,
right? That hey, I'm not going to have a concert now in your state because you're passing these laws that I see as discriminatory, mm-hmm. and so the latest one that I saw was Bruce Springsteen, and it raises a lot of issues because, you know, I don't know if these people are really reading these laws and understanding what's being nuanced here, mm-hmm. because one of the things that I find with our culture that is just infuriating. Is that they don't seem to realize that there are implications to what they're desiring. So that, you know, right now the big movement is that anybody should be able to use any bathroom that they want.
Yeah.
Right?
Based on – well, no, it's interesting because they're not – nobody should be able to use any bathroom they want. It's that you should be able to use the bathroom that ties to your gender, right?
Or the gender that you identify with.
Yeah,
that's the key.
Exactly. Phrase, so right. they still like, okay, if you identify as a male, don't you be going in the woman's washroom because that's still wrong, right? Which is unless they do the gender neutral.
I'm assuming that that's what they would say
because the law always states like the people or the little bylaws or however you want to call them always state like a person is allowed to go into the bathroom that they identify with, mm-hmm. right? So however that goes, but what's going to end up happening when you identify both? Or I mean, I guess that's an aside, but at any rate,
well, the problem is there's implications. There are pragmatic implications to.
I think that's the big thing is the pragmatic side of safety, especially, is a huge issue, right? I know in Alberta right now, there's a huge kind of an uproar, I guess, because the province is passing laws, apparently, you know, pushing for gender neutral bathrooms in schools. And it raises all kinds of security concerns because, for one, if somebody identifies himself to be a woman, for example, well, how would you be able to verify that,
mm-hmm.
right? Between somebody who truly, sincerely identifies himself as a woman, even though he is biologically male, vis-a-vis somebody who is doing that to get into the girls' locker room or something like that.
Well, and Steve, you know, you've got a little girl.
Yeah.
And I have two little boys. I know what it's like already as a parent taking your kids to the public restroom, mm-hmm. and the safety I'm already, you know, concerned about with
right.
making sure either I'm in there with them or whatever it might be. I mean, because think about mm-hmm. the fact that even today, my wife, Nancy, will take our boys into the bathroom with her, right? For right. safety reasons.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And nobody's balking about that, right?
No.
But I think this is one of the things that kills me with our culture. It's like this seems to be completely insensitive to those that are not transgender, which mm-hmm. is the vast majority of the population. And then they don't realize that, like, listen, there's going to have to be nuancing to how we're looking at even things like bathrooms, mm-hmm. If we're going to continue to have a safe and productive culture and society. I just often get this feeling as you're reading this stuff, like, that just anything kind of goes. And, like, guys like Bruce Springsteen, I think we should talk about him here for a second. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they've given any thought to the implications of what they're fighting for and how these kind of things should be nuanced. And then yeah. as soon as you try to nuance, then it's backlash as, well, you're just bigoted and...
It's hate speech.
And it's hate, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is why I appreciated. We'll leave the link to it so you guys can check it out too. But listeners, there's a guy named Michael Brown that I was introduced to this morning.
Yeah. Just a little bit about Michael Brown. He's... he's a Messianic Jew. He's got his PhD in Semitic languages and ancient Near Eastern literature or something like that. So he's Jewish, like, through and through, but he loves Jesus. He comes from a kind of a drug-heavy background. He used to do all kinds of drugs. His friends called him Iron Bear or whatever. But he has since... He has since become a follower of Jesus, cleaned up, and then got a PhD and everything. And he wrote a book called From LSD to PhD. An interesting guy. Very smart. He wrote a 9-volume work called Answering Jewish Objections, because that's the kind of a crowd that he wants to reach. But he also is he's very much involved in the whole dialogue on gender issues and homosexuality, same-sex marriage, that sort of a thing.
Hmm.
So yeah, that's him. That's Michael Brown.
And he wrote this open letter to Bruce Springsteen that mm-hmm. I found really compelling. We read it. Well, these guys had read it before, but I got to
get through this morning. It's been making its rounds on social media.
Yeah, yeah. And this guy makes some killer arguments, picks up some good points, but that was one of the ones he says, Bruce, imagine a 6'4" strapping, like, football player guy that all of a sudden one day decides that he is a woman. And trapped in a man's body, throws on a wig and a dress.
Yeah. And heads into the bathroom.
He said, Bruce, what do you say to the little girl who's in that bathroom, or the mom who's now terrified, standing there as they come out of the shower in wrapped in towels while this hulking
or the stall, or
whatever, if it's not a changing
room. Right, because he did bring up, like, if you went to the pool,
yeah.
Yeah, and you're in the changing room of the pool.
Yeah, exactly. So what do you say to them? Because right now he's like, we're just concerned with the feelings of these people who are troubled, right? Who are experiencing gender dysphoria or however you want to call it. But he said, what about the feelings of everybody else? Because, mm-hmm. Andy, as you mentioned, this is an unbelievably small minority. And I know that we shouldn't ever overlook the needs and the feelings of the minority.
Hey, I'm a visible minority.
Exactly, right? So, but at the same time, when something like this is going on, you have to look. I think you'd be not doing due diligence or not doing your duty if you didn't look at that little girl and her mother. Mm-hmm. Who are experiencing this.
And now that's one argument, and I think it's an all right argument. Mm-hmm. But then there's another one that mm-hmm. that he brings up, and I find this persuasive as well. And that is, well, what about predators as well? People who are mm-hmm. going to now monopolize on mm-hmm. the opportunity that they get a slap on a wig and head into the women's changing room. Mm-hmm. And we just saw in the news yeah. that there's a number of places that are having to actually go back on this whole gender neutral, you know, bathrooms and yeah. showers, because dudes were going in there videoing women, mm-hmm. You know, under stalls, or those that were taking showers, and yeah. And now all of a sudden they're like, maybe we better think about this.
Yeah, I think University of Toronto had an incident similar to that, if not exactly that incident. And they temporarily reduced the number of gender-neutral bathrooms. I think they have one on each floor or something like that. And and I guess that's the thing, right? A lot of people on sort of the more socially conservative side of the argument, when they start opposing some of these bills and things like that, what they get accused of is, oh, you're just fear-mongering. Well, with this one, I mean, that's exactly what's happening. Everything that these social conservatives have been warning against, it's happening. It's the same thing with the issue of same-sex marriage. You know, if you open up the definition of marriage, this is what's going to happen. And the sort of pro same-sex marriage crew, what they have been saying is, you're just fear-mongering. Who's talking about incestual marriages? Who's talking about yada, yada, yada? That's exactly what's happening.
Well, ironically, I was going to say a lot of people now are, yeah, that's exactly what's going on.
That's almost the sort of the next step to go to, right? And so
it's like an ad hominem, fallacy.
And the thing is, just the way things are going right now, I think, you know, what a lot of, like those social conservatives, their concerns are being vindicated one by one.
Mm-hmm.
And that concerns me, you know, not that they're vindicated, but that these things are actually happening really concerns me.
Yeah. And now we're seeing, hey, this isn't just, you know, people that are fear mongering, like there's actual validity to this. Mm-hmm. But I mean, come on. I mean, that's a no brainer that there's going to be validity to that and that there's going to be issues. I mean, have they looked at the kind of world in which we live in?
Well, yeah, that's the thing, right?
Now, here's where I think, though, a lot of people like myself, you know, find it difficult to navigate through this secular maze that we've got going on right now. And that is, you know, this goes both ways. I mean, now you got companies that are like, well, I'm not going to do business in your state because you're a bunch of jerks passing laws I don't like. Yeah. But what about you companies that I don't like what you're doing? And I don't like who you're supporting. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden do I stop using your company? And the one that I saw on the news that I thought was absolutely hysterical and shows just how ridiculous our culture is that Bayer Company. Mm-hmm. Bayer Company, of all people, were talking about how upset they were about this bill.
Yeah, and B-A-Y-E-R, the company Bayer. That makes aspirin, famous for aspirin.
Right, and they're now. And apparently they do business in the state, and they're like, well, we're upset with this, and we're going to...
Up in arms.
Yeah. Needless to say, it's a well-known fact that the Bayer Company was involved in producing Zyklon B in World War II to gas the Jews in the Holocaust.
Yeah. To be fair, they're IG Farben at that point, and then they turned into Bayer.
This is the kicker, isn't it?
Yeah, they had their one of their main guys, Fritz Termeer. He was an IG Farben board member from 1926 to 1945, and he directed operations at the IG Farben plant at Auschwitz. He was sentenced to 7 years in prison during the IG Farben military tribunal at Nuremberg. And then upon his release, he was elected Bayer's supervisory board head in 1956.
Is he still living?
Well, so
I would imagine he's probably
long gone,
passed on now, but...
But that just shows you how tight it is. Okay, sure, it was one company before, you know, during the war, then after the trials, they could switch into another company, but they put
there's a connection.
Yeah, they put their head guy back into place as soon as he gets done serving time. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, right? So I know of a lot of people that boycott Bayer. Mm-hmm. And there's also auto manufacturers that were involved in the Holocaust as well, that people are like, okay, so should we boycott them as well?
Yeah. And then now we're experiencing things with, like, PayPal.
Yeah, here at Apologetics Canada, this has been brought to our attention. People have been asking us, you know, hey, should you guys really be using PayPal?
Yeah.
Because PayPal supports Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. They're heavily
involved. Not just supports, like they're vociferous about their intent.
Yeah, and that actually, you know, because at first I was like, man, you know, if we get involved in what every business is, you know, doing, I mean, good grief, what can I purchase or use, you know? Mm-hmm. But that is one thing that does concern me with PayPal and other companies is when like you said, then when they're heavily involved,
militant,
and they've got quite the agenda with what they're doing as a company and what they stand for, besides the point of their company, you know,
they're corporate activists.
Right.
What they are.
That's a good way of putting it. And that changes things, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it becomes an issue of ethical consumerism on our part, right? What companies are we willing to support? Ethical consumerism goes into a lot of areas, whether you buy clothing that's manufactured in places that don't have good human rights and things like that. But in this case, at home with places like PayPal, what do they support intensely, and can we get behind that, and should we get behind that, or should we boycott them ourselves and stop using them and use alternatives to that?
Well, it's interesting too, because this is what a lot of people have suggested that maybe Christians should do. For example, if I'm, you know, a Christian cake maker and I'm being forced to make cakes for gay weddings, well, maybe what I should do then is make it well known on my website or whatever that the proceeds, certain amount of proceeds from every sale of my cakes is going, you know, to fight against these certain bills or whatever they might be that these people are standing for. So that
never thought of that before.
Right. So, but that would be the equivalent, wouldn't it?
Right.
Yeah. It's finding a way to be able to have your opinion and voice heard. So, I mean, this raises the question, though, then, is it wrong for Bruce Springsteen and friends to be doing boycotts, right? Because we talk about ourselves doing boycotts. So is it wrong, or is it good but misguided?
I think one thing that Michael Brown raised in his article is that he actually affirmed Bruce Springsteen in that he actually put morality before money, right? So he is kind of sticking to his gun, and he is kind of boycotting what he believes is wrong. Yeah. So I think in that's good.
It needs to be applauded.
Yeah, where
but do you
they
think
disagree.
It's a fair boycott?
What do you mean?
Like, it seems weird to me that you got a state that's passing laws, and then you're refusing to do a concert in that state. It seems like to me at least, it seems odd.
Well, because is that concert supporting the state, or is it a means of entertaining its people? Right?
I guess that's what I'm saying. And you've got a mix of people that come to his concerts that surely don't have anything to do with this or have, you know, any...
Yeah. I guess if I were a musician, I would think, if I were a very well-known musician, I would think that my presence in that state is going to generate revenue and bring all kinds of benefits to that state.
And right? If anything, maybe you would use the concert as a megaphone to voice what you think and about what you don't like that's going on in the state.
Go into the Dragon's Den.
Because that's what I'm getting at here that just seems bizarre to me is... what point do you just have no more states to even do concerts in anymore because you don't like any particular law or thing that's going on in that state? I mean, come on.
Well, and that's the thing is Michael Brown at the very end, I thought one of his most poignant points was that he said that Bruce, 6 months ago, the rules were exactly the same as they are now. Each person to their biological gender in their own bathroom. It's the same thing. But 6 months ago, you agreed to do the concert and that was the rule. And now... it's the same rules. It got changed back, or it changed and then changed back. So what's the big deal? You were willing to come then. You weren't pitching a fit then, but now all of a sudden you are.
Well, now it's the cool thing, and this is where I really feel with the companies and with personas, it is the cool thing to stand up against these. And so this is actually more about consumerism than it is about what they think is right or wrong.
Exactly. Could you say that though? Because they are, by voicing their opinions, they are losing a customer base. Like,
I wonder if they are though.
I see, because to me, it's almost like social media bullying. Because if you don't right now, if you're the government or the business or the individual that doesn't voice their opinion on this side, you look like a bigot. Because the way they frame the argument is, if you believe in the transgender, whatever, it's discriminatory. They keep saying it's a discrimination law. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like saying that you're anti-choice if you're a pro-lifer. And they say anti-choice. The way they're framing the argument is it's very inflammatory and it's bullying. So these companies have to do it, because if they don't, you believe in discrimination then. If you're not standing up to discrimination, you're for it.
And without even identifying what kind of discrimination it is, because some discrimination is justified.
A good thing. Yeah.
I mean, we discriminate all the time. Right. And we make distinctions is what I mean. Right?
Yeah.
And so would you call that discrimination? I mean, look, like if I tried out for a role in, say, the movie Lord of the Rings, right? And I say, you got to make
me. Sorry, I don't know why I'm laughing,
thinking of what role he would be.
Yeah, me too.
Dude, like, make me Gandalf. They would probably laugh me out of the room, right? In fact, why? Because the Lord of the Rings is based on their sort of motif, I guess, is Norse mythology with elves and things like that, right?
Yeah.
There is no room in there for an Asian man to be Gandalf or a hobbit or whatever. Like, I'm not at all bothered by the fact that...
I never thought about that. Lord of the Rings does not have any Asian people, does it?
No Asians, and you don't really see black people either. In fact, that concern was raised by the black community at one point, apparently, that it's discriminatory because they didn't cast any black people or things like that. I'm not sure if that's entirely true, but let's just say that it's true. I'm thinking to myself, no, that's not discrimination. You just don't fit the part.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm not going to go to, I don't know, like,
there were a lot of short people in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, they got hooked up.
I'm sure anybody that was tall was going to have a hard time getting a role in that movie.
Yeah, or, like, things like that. Like, I mean, I'm not going to... It's kind of like that whole issue with the on-campus Christian clubs that are being shut down by these different universities because these Christian clubs won't allow an atheist to be their leader. Yeah. InterVarsity in California and in other places, they started getting shut down because of that. So all I'm saying is, obviously, these things to me are completely absurd, right? So I guess my question is, is this the kind of a distinction or discrimination, if you want to call it? Is this the kind of thing that's justified or not? Well, and is this a moral concern, or is this a pragmatic concern, or is this both? And I think these are all the questions that we really need to kind of wrestle with.
Yeah. Especially as we're looking at religious freedom too, and people being, Christians, and how marginalized we are, and how we're not allowed to have a voice any longer. And I think a lot of people are feeling frustrated by that, and are having a difficult time knowing, how do we navigate through this secular challenges that we continue to encounter.
And as we wrap up, I guess I just wanted to say one thing. I mean, in talking about all of this, some people may get the impression that you're gay bashing or we're transgender bashing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that Michael Brown brought up in the letter is, hey Bruce, you might think me. Somehow that I'm not compassionate to these people. I actually, that somehow they don't deserve compassion, these transgender people. Well, I think the exact opposite. I think they precisely need compassion.
Mm-hmm.
But compassion is not the same thing as celebration.
No.
I guess I just want to communicate that to let our listeners know. It's not that we have an agenda against gay people, transgender people. It's not that we hate them. But some of the things that are happening here, it's infringing upon religious freedom, freedom of speech, and a lot of things that we really cherish in our daily lives.
And not to mention that, I'll speak for myself, I think that a lot of these people actually need help. Mm-hmm. And by celebrating or by co-signing some of this behavior,
we're not doing them any service.
No, we're actually harming them by doing this, because it perpetuates a lie and it perpetuates something that will only lead to more discomfort, prejudice, and pain. And I think we as a community, and I would like to hope that our brothers and sisters in the church want to help, not just shun. Right. Yeah. And so that's the direction we need to be going. And so it's born out of love, not out of fear or hate.
Yeah. I mean, I have a 2.5-year-old daughter. You know, if she, you know, heaven forbid, gets cancer or something like that, you know, I'm going to do whatever I can to help her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm not going to celebrate with her. Like, so I guess the question is, you know, like, what is this thing? Is this thing actually a mental illness or whatever? I mean, we can disagree on that, but don't just assume that because we're talking about this issue that we're just gay bashing or trans bashing or mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it. I guess I do believe that if whatever else we may say as Christians about these people, what we don't say is that they are just a waste of space.
Mm-hmm.
They are made in the image of God and they ought to be loved. And that's really where we're coming from.
Yeah.
I just want to communicate that to everybody. Well, our time is up. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll see you again next week.